It's another edition of the Falls Cast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press here in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today it has been sunny and in the mid-80s. Today's podcast will not feature one of our regular roundtable discussions, but we are very happy to be able to bring to you a discussion with Kathleen Balog from the Akron Zoo, who's going to tell us all about the blue lobster, which was recently found at the national seafood chain Red Lobster location in Cuyahoga Falls. We will return next week with our regular roundtable discussion format and an interview, and we hope you will tune in then. But for now, everybody stay safe, and we will catch up with you next week. Okay, so it was just over a month ago now that an employee at the Cuyahoga Falls location of the national seafood chain restaurant Red Lobster discovered a very rare blue lobster in the regular shipment of live lobsters to the restaurant. After a little bit of digging and searching, they were able to reach the Akron Zoo, and the Akron Zoo was kind enough to take the blue lobster on as an animal in an exhibit at our local zoo here. And we are now joined by the zookeeper and aquarist, Kathleen Balog. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about your role at the zoo?
Yeah, sure. So I am the animal care manager, and that means that I oversee, for my department, I oversee all of the ectotherms, which is anything that's cold-blooded. So all of your amphibians, reptiles, aquatics, invertebrates, all of that stuff.
That is maybe the coolest job ever.
It keeps you on your toes, and it's really a great job.
So is a lot of this stuff then, or are a lot of the animals that you're overseeing then the animals that are on the sort of strange creatures exhibit? Is that still going on? That was, I think, like maybe 2 years ago or so, they kind of renovated that area.
Yeah, so part of what I oversee is the curious creatures area, and that one was opened a little over 2 years ago, and currently our buildings are not open, but that doesn't mean that you know, the animals still need all the excellent care and treatment. So yeah, we're just clicking along.
Yeah, and there are a lot of really interesting animals in the Curious Creatures exhibit, as one would expect from an exhibit called Curious Creatures, which would include a lot of, you know, sea creatures, like the sort of like bioluminescent jellyfish and other creatures that I suppose a blue lobster would feel at home around, right?
Yeah, so Claudia, which is our blue lobster, she is definitely surrounded by some unique animals that fill some amazing niches, and it's just a really great exhibit. It's the bioluminescence of coral all the way to the leafcutter ant colonies, to the naked mole rats. It's pretty fascinating, and I think that aquarium and marine sciences are, it's a whole different world. So she's right at home over there.
Awesome. Can you take us through the story of how Claudia ended up at the Akron Zoo?
Yeah. So I got a phone call from our communications department through our partnership with Seafood Watch. But really, so to take you back to the origin of the story, the red lobster shipment had come in, and while they were unpacking the lobsters to put into the live lobster tank at the restaurant, one of the employees had been given a service award for over 20 years of excellent service, and it was called a Blue Lobster Award. And so this was a great program that Red Lobster does with their employees to say, you know, a great employee like that is rare, like 1 in 2 million, like a blue lobster. And so because of this reward, she knew that this lobster was special. And so she contacted her manager, and they contacted corporate at Red Lobster in Florida. And so they quickly realized that, you know, this is not supposed to end up on someone's dinner plate. And they are partnered with Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. And what was interesting is Seafood Watch through Monterey Bay is an app that allows consumers to make educated decisions on what kind of seafood to purchase or consume. So, for example, some seafood practices are not sustainable, such as overfishing or, under-regulated aquaculture. And some of it is really sustainable. Like lobsters, for example, are very sustainable seafood, and they're very carefully managed so that they don't negatively impact the ocean. So anyway, long story short, Monterey Bay in California was contacted, and we're partners with them because we like to promote any sustainable projects. So they contacted us because we were partners with them and said, hey, they're in Cuyahoga Falls, not 15 minutes away. There's a blue lobster. Do you guys think that you could go get it and put it in any of your areas? So we had an empty quarantine system that was the exact right parameters. They need cold salt water. And we loaded up the van, and me and aquarist Scott Heidler went and picked up our lobster.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you talk about the rarity of the blue lobster? I know that it's 1 in 2 million. Actually, that's very interesting how that employee knew that it was something special too, because I was kind of curious like how, you know, an average Red Lobster employee might know, you know, that it was even that rare. Because I mean, looking at some pictures online, you can find pictures of blue lobsters where they look very blue, but I feel like the pictures of Claudia that I saw, she didn't look especially blue like in the pictures. And I know there are other pigmentations that are very rare in lobsters, like there are like sort of cotton candy colored ones. Mm-hmm. And others. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, so we're hoping to get some better pictures of her soon, but so the pictures that were posted, she is actually really blue, that was taken during the acclimation process. So, and I can talk a little bit about that later, but basically that's how we get them used to their new tank. And one of the things is you want it to be kind of dimly lit, because could you imagine being acclimated to your new home and bright light when you kind of, your main hobby is to hang out in a cave. so it was hard. So we do want to get some glamour shots of her soon, but, so the blue lobsters are 1 in 2 million, and it's from a protein that they produce that mixes with the other proteins they naturally make, and the color comes out blue. And although 1 in 2 million are blue, the odds of catching a blue lobster makes it even less likely. So only 1 in 200 million blue lobsters are actually caught in the lobster traps. And so a lot of times these are recognized right away and put back into the ocean. But if they do make their way all the way inland, then occasionally aquariums will get them a new home, and it would which is best for them, instead of going back and doing another long trip back to the water.
Yeah. And do you want to talk then about that acclimation process or any of the other sort of like zoological scientific things behind caring for this animal?
Yes. Well, I always say that aquarists are part chemist, part physicist, and part zoologist. And wow, it's just fascinating what the level of knowledge and detail that goes into it. But basically, when a crustacean or any invertebrate is getting acclimated to new water, these guys have something called a hydrostatic skeleton, which means that they use really like the tension between the difference in salinities in their blood and in the ocean. So that's kind of how they move all their muscles. So the salinity inside of their shells and the salinity of the water outside, which is the salinity is the amount of salt in the water, really need to be closely matched. So if you do need to change the salinity like we did, you have to do it very slowly. One of the things we did was match the salinity. One of the other things we did was slowly match the temperature. And so she was at 41 degrees, so we slowly brought her, slowly acclimated her to 55 degrees. And then another thing we have to do is make sure that we acclimate them slowly to the pH, so the acidity or basicness of the water. So she was at a pH of 6.1 or 6.5, I believe, and we wanted to bring her up to 8.2, which is closer to the natural pH of ocean water. So you can see, and you don't want to change all these things all at once. So we kind of slowly brought all these things up. And she did great. And so I feel like I really got to know her during this long acclimation process.
How old is she, or do you have some estimation of how old she might be?
So we can't tell how old lobsters are, because when they molt, they kind of shed all of that scientific evidence, if you will, of their age. It's not like fish, how sometimes you can tell the age of the fish through their scale. So we don't know, but we do know that she's, a pound and a half in her carapace length. So that's the main central part of her body, is long enough that she's considered an adult. So.
And how long do lobsters, how long could a lobster live like in captivity like this?
So there are some accounts of a lobster rarely reaching about 100 years old. But
oh my goodness.
Yeah, that would be an amazing target. But really, there's no way to know how old she was, so there's no way to know how long she could be alive here.
But she will serve an important kind of animal ambassador role, if for no other reason than allowing an opportunity for visitors to the zoo to learn about the things you were talking about before, like sustainability and maybe some other things?
Yeah, exactly. So she's not out of the woods yet. She's just passed her quarantine period. So we quarantined her for 30 days in her own system. And we're about to do her quarantine exam, I believe Thursday, with the veterinary staff, to just kind of look at all the bumps and bruises that she kind of accrued on the way or before she was caught, because lobsters can't heal their skin at any given point like we do. We get an abrasion or a cut and we heal right away. The only time that they can heal their shells is each molt. So any of the bumps and bruises are going to kind of stay with her until she molts. So molting can be a really precarious, really kind of vulnerable time for a lobster. And a lot of females, she's from the north coast of Maine, and a lot of females will molt later in the fall. And so we really want to make sure she makes it through that molting process safely, because during her journey, she wouldn't have had the same light cycles or temperature cues or other environmental cues to tell her when it's time to molt. And so she could either suppress her molt, which means she would skip it this year, which is okay, or she would get through the molt. So we're hoping for a very successful, smooth, easy molt, and she'll get that bright, shiny new shell, and that outer shell will still be blue. That's what we're kind of waiting on, is we want to keep her somewhere where we can keep a close eye on her, and then we were hoping to potentially display her in Curious Creatures, but wherever she goes, she will be a great ambassador for the Seafood Watch program, which I can't say enough good things about that program.
Yeah, I was actually, as you were describing that, I was thinking about a terrible, although very educational documentary that I watched a long time ago about dolphins who in Japan are sort of rounded up. And unfortunately, many of them are killed. And that in certain parts of the world, if you were to go to a market and buy fish, you might think you were buying one thing, but it could be a dolphin. It could be any number of fish that are not supposed to be fished, things like that. So does this app that you're talking about allow people to hopefully sort of discover those things so they don't mistakenly buy something like that?
Well, it's more about being able to make sure that you know, so you should always be able to know exactly what you're getting. And there is kind of some of that bait and switch, but less so in, in your grocery stores. Basically, what the app does is you can kind of put in, let's say, for example, you wanted to enjoy some shrimp for dinner. Not all shrimp is sourced in the same way. So while some shrimp are going to be really well managed or regulated in sustainable ways, where if they're aquacultured, they're done so in a way that doesn't pollute the water, other places may be doing poor practices, such as clear-cutting mangroves to collect fish or to collect the shrimp, which those mangroves are important for species like fishing cats. And so because these things change constantly, there would be really no way for every consumer to stay up on every species of aquatics. And so that's what Monterey Bay does. They take all this great information and they put it in an app, and it kind of gives you a red light, yellow light, green light. And, you know, if it's something that's kind of red light is for things that maybe you should avoid, it'll also give you sustainable alternatives. So it's amazing. And I actually have always been a big fan of this app. I have it on my phone and I use it all the time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do hear sometimes conflicting information about seafood. I'm a vegetarian except for seafood. I guess that makes me a pescatarian. When I tend to try and get seafood that's wild caught, just because I at some point heard that, you know, fish farming, they tend to feed the fish like the equivalent of like dog food. And that's something that I just found kind of gross. Is there a truth to that? Or, I mean,
so there are just like anything, there's really good ways to aquaculture, and then there's kind of poor aquaculture practice. And so, you know, within the United States, these things are more regulated or managed, but it's when you're sourcing, you know, different sources are going to have different techniques. And even within the United States, there's certainly some practices that are going to give you a different kind of flavor to the meat, is what I find. But even when you're buying things that are wild caught, just the same as aquaculture, sometimes there's really great practices and sometimes there's poor practices. So, you know, maybe some gill nets are not as sustainable as other practices. You know, there's good ways and bad ways to do pole lines. So it's a really amazing app that kind of sorts through all of that information for you. It's amazing. Occasionally I'll go to restaurants and I am that person. if I order any fish or seafood at a restaurant, I do ask if the chef knows where the fish is from or how it was caught. And sometimes the chefs are thrilled because they are using sustainable practices. And sometimes they just say, I'm not really sure. And then I just pass and get something else.
Good for you. So Claudia then will provide a good opportunity to teach people about not only different aquaculture practices, perhaps, but also this app, which will help people avoid aquacultured seafood that may be questionable.
Exactly. And, you know, if we start taking care of our oceans now, they will rebound quickly. So it's something that was really, it's a call to arms. And I think it's something that's really, as somebody who does try and eat only sustainable seafood, it is very doable.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit, I know you mentioned briefly that some of the buildings are closed, but can you tell us a little bit about how, as far as you know, Akron Zoo is weathering the storm of this terrible pandemic?
You know, the zoo has always been extremely financially responsible. And so we're certainly weathering the storm okay, and providing the animals with the daily husbandry and care that they're accustomed to. So the zookeepers were labeled as essential personnel and were still reporting to work and providing that excellence of care that these animals needed, which is really great. We actually had a couple success stories as well. We started breeding our silver fulu, which are critically endangered. And all of this.
And what are those?
So the silver fulu, so I'm not sure, some people have aquariums at home and they may know what like an Oscar or a cichlid is. So this is a cichlid from Africa, from Lake Victoria in Africa, that is presumed to be extinct in the wild. And the
wow.
Zoo is, yeah, the zoo is one of the few institutions that is doing a breeding program. And we had 38 adults at the beginning of the pandemic. And at the end of it, we have successfully bred 70 offspring, 70 little fry, which is what baby fish are called.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So we can't wait for all of our buildings to open and show people all these amazing things. Right now, we're operating at 25% of our capacity, so the park can usually hold, I believe, 7,000 people, and we're operating at 25% of that. And we're doing timed ticketing, and that really allows us to disinfect between groups so that we're keeping everybody safe and sound. And I can say that I think everybody is doing a great job with disinfection, but it doesn't hurt that we have, you know, biologists and people with microbiology backgrounds helping guide our disinfection decisions.
Yeah. And I mean, I think zoos in general are trying to adapt as best they can to the situation. I was recently on a very short family vacation, and we decided at the last minute to visit the Columbus Zoo because we had never been there. And it's, of course, a very famous zoo. Reciprocity had been suspended. And I think that's the case at most zoos. I assume it is at Akron as well. We still got to go in, and having never been there, we couldn't really say whether it seemed like there were fewer people or whatever. And the Columbus Zoo also seems to have kind of an air more of an amusement park than of a zoo in some ways. But we did get to, like, you know, pet the stingrays and things that we had never done, which was pretty cool. So I'm glad to see that zoos are operating well. It makes me think of, at least at the beginning of the pandemic, we saw a lot of stories about how nature was kind of coming back because there were so few people out. And it did make me wonder if we were seeing some good things in the zoos as well, just because of fewer visitors. So, I mean, do the animals seem happier or in a different mood because there's fewer visitors?
And speaking with the zookeepers, there's kind of, there were some animals that we thought kind of missed people and some that we thought maybe, explored a little bit more of their habitat. Being the scientific people that we are, we actually have an animal behavioralist, Stephanie Miner. She's amazing. And she leapt into action and we actually started studying their behavior. And, I know she was just working on the results, and it seems like some animals were indifferent and perhaps some of them were utilizing their habitat differently. So I would love to follow up with you and find out what Stephanie learned. But yeah, what we started doing was monitoring their behavior and just seeing what are the animals doing and where are they hanging out? And is it any different from when we're fully open to the public? So that's going to be a really exciting study. I will say it does seem accounts, I do feel like the otters really, really love people watching. So I think they're excited to see people coming back.
They are hilarious little guys too.
If I had to come back as anything, I'd want to be an otter, that's for sure.
We would definitely love to have, periodically to speak to somebody from the zoo. We're all big supporters. I had a membership for several years and I have a couple little kids who had a lot of fun from the time they were pretty much teeny tiny to, you know, now they're about to start kindergarten and they have fond memories of the Akron Zoo.
Oh, that's amazing. And our membership is so important to us, but so is our community. And so we really, you know, we do a lot of community give backs and we've had to really reimagine how we're doing that. You know, we have our backpack adventure where we distribute back to school supplies to the community and we had to kind of pivot and do that as a drive-through. So I think our commitment to the animals and to the community has still stayed strong through this pandemic. And I think it's just in our nature and in our fiber.
Yeah. The zoo is really a great steward of a sense of community. And I think that that's no more true than, at the upcoming community days where people from different communities are going to be able to come to the zoo for free. Obviously it looks a little different because of the reduced capacity and having to reserve a time, but I know that in Cuyahoga Falls, for instance, I think if you buy tickets by Friday, you can come to the zoo starting the 31st through, I think it's early September, for free. So that's another way that you guys are giving back to the community and letting people come in who maybe can't afford otherwise to come in or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think that, and just getting that experience, the animals here, a lot of them are serving a great purpose in being an ambassador, but we also just do a lot of amazing, amazing things to help their wild counterparts. So whether that's finding out nutritionally what's best for them or best breeding practices, those things are being applied into field studies and field biology. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you're not going to want to answer this question, but I want to ask you anyway. What is your favorite animal in the whole zoo?
Who could even begin to pick one? yeah, I guess I would have to say I'm really just fascinated with the leafcutter ants. There's just so much to them. and you could just watch them forever. But oh gosh, I can't really say there's just one.
I would say leafcutter ants is like the hipster answer, but because you're actually the animal care manager, and you know, a scientist, you get a pass because that's pretty great. I'm a big fan of cats and birds. So, and really any cat or bird, it is going to be my favorite when I'm standing in front of it. The bald eagles at the Akron Zoo are amazing. The snow leopards at the Akron Zoo are amazing.
I think we're going to be really excited to have tigers coming back when the Wild Asia's complete. That's going
to
be amazing.
I meant to ask about, so there's, isn't there Wild Asia and then another new exhibit also, or is it just Wild Asia?
Wild Asia is going to have several exhibits within it. So we just opened Pride of Africa, and that campus is gorgeous. And now we're working through Wild Asia, which was set to open this year, but then things kind of got upside down. We're really lucky because the construction workers still kept working through, and really we're still building away. So I believe that'll be the red pandas, tigers, just other great buildings, and it's got a really neat look to it too. So if you guys come to the zoo now, you can kind of see a sneak peek of some of the buildings. You can see the A-frames of the night houses, and some of the exhibit or habitats. So it's cool. It's gonna be neat.
So Wild Africa and Wild Asia are pretty new, right?
Yeah, Pride of Africa was just open last year, Wild Asia is going to be a brand new campus. It's located similarly to where the tigers were previously, but this is just going to be just a really reimagined habitat for the tigers that'll actually allow us to become, hopefully, fingers crossed, a breeding facility for the Sumatran tiger, because their numbers are just in severe decline, and you know, with less than 600 Sumatran tigers left, it's their breeding program's more vital than ever.
Well, tigers are really popular right now for reasons that I won't go into.
Yeah, very different reasons than. I think, you know, we always try and keep everything as scientific and as genetically viable, and you know, I could just tell you a million amazing success stories that come out of zoos and the excellent husbandry and care.
Awesome. Well, I know that the people of Cuyahoga Falls are really glad to have such a great zoo so close by, and that we at the Falls Cast here are very, very appreciative of your time in talking to us about Claudette and about all this other great stuff that's happening at the zoo. Having a rare blue lobster found at a red lobster located right here in our city is pretty cool, especially when you look at national news and you see Cuyahoga Falls in all these articles. So it's great that we get to be home to, well, that Akron gets to be home, but that we get to be partially responsible for having such a great example of a rare species that hopefully will be a great animal ambassador for years to come. So we thank you for your time and for all your conversation. Yeah.
Thank you. And thanks for all the great questions. And we really do hope to see everybody back at the zoo and as soon as we can. And we miss everybody, but we're glad that people are starting to trickle in.
Yeah. Well, then we'll see you soon at the zoo. FallsCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.